You are listening to The Scroll, an audiobook about Ecclesiastes written and read by Vance Neudorf. This is chapter 11. The sparrows fighting over the crust of bread roused Kohelet from his sleep. Benjamin must have returned in the night to put out more bread. Kohelet had not seen him come and go, despite a restless night filled with dreams of Caleb chasing him through the alleys of the market. Each time he turned a corner, a large cage was waiting for him. Kohelet sat up, wiped his eyes, and looked for Simca on the ledge. Throwing back the covers, he approached his desk, and the sparrows swept away from the window. Simca was not waiting to sing for him. Kohelet moved over to the window and looked over at Caleb's apartment. The windows were covered, and the cage was gone. He could only hope that Simca was out in the orchards enjoying some of the last figs. Esther came out of her door and gave him a cheerful wave. He smiled and waved back as she turned into Eli's shop. He should be down there with his friends, but Benjamin wanted him to stay out of sight. He didn't feel much like writing. He was tired out from his restless night. The bucket with his scroll swayed gently in the morning breeze. Reading would help, at least pass the time. As he pulled the ruined Genesis scroll from the bucket, he found the rest of Eli's food wrapped up in a cloth. Sitting at his desk, he munched an apple as he unrolled the first section of the text. The account of the foundational acts of God in the world made it clear that God was responsible not only for creating the world, but also for sowing the thorns and thistles that now infested the ground. Those claiming to speak for God were quick to give their interpretation of God's overall plan for mankind without regard for the fact that God's plan included the introduction of random entropy. And it made perfect sense, for after Eden, people would not seek to relate to God if everything moves forward smoothly as it had in the garden. The trials and unexpected calamities of a random broken world pushed mankind back into dependence on someone greater than themselves. God had created mankind for a pure relationship, but in a world dominated by the knowledge of both good and evil, that relationship had to be constrained by the problems of life. Some viewed this as punishment, but the curse was against the ground, not against people. God had placed death, thorns, and thistles in the world to hedge them in and restrain their newfound knowledge of evil. Now they either had to make peace with that reality or waste their lives struggling against it. This was a key theme in his teachings, and as the thoughts began to flow, he unrolled his own scroll on top of Genesis and began to write again. The morning passed by quickly, and he wrote two full columns before a cheerful greeting from outside his door pulled him from his thoughts. Esther did not wait for an invitation, but barged in the room and ran over to the desk. "Eli and I were catching up on things over our lunch, and he told me you were not feeling well. I brought you some fresh bread and also some of the medicine I use when I feel poorly." She held out a small clay bottle that smelled of bitter herbs. "I take it with hot water and honey. It's good for whatever ails you." Kohelet accepted the bottle and put it on the desk. Esther leaned in over the scroll. "So this is the scroll Eli has been telling me about. He says you are going to put all your teachings together so others can read them. I think that's a wonderful plan. Everyone needs to know how to make a good life. The things that comes our way are not always easy, but life can still be good." Kohelet looked up at her beaming face and smiled in return. "I wrote that down this very morning." Esther plunked herself down on the corner of the bed, and the wood frame groaned in response. "Read it to me. I like that one." Kohelet turned back to the desk. The ink was too wet to move, so he leaned over the scroll. "Consider what God has done. No one can straighten what he has twisted, so when good times come, enjoy them. And when bad times arrive, remember that God created both to ensure that a person will never know what their future holds." Esther gave a hearty laugh. "You need to read that to the fortune tellers who come through the market. The last time one was here, she asked me to watch her booth for a minute while she ran to the well. She was in such a hurry to get a drink that she was hit by the butcher's cart and broke her foot. I felt bad for her, but it certainly showed how much of the future she can see." Kohelet nodded. "Yet in a random world, a fortune teller just needs to make a few good guesses about something general that might happen. She has a chance of being right, and if the person she is advising makes a choice that turns out good for them, they will come back and pay for more advice. Everyone fears the future and wants reassurance that everything will turn out all right. Given a good ratio of success, a fortune teller gains a reputation that can survive even getting run over by a cart." Esther laughed, and then her face grew somber. "I guess that applies even for those who seek to do right. I could get hit by a cart on my way back to the shop." Kohelet pointed to the next section on the scroll and read aloud, I have seen both a righteous person who died young and a wicked person who prolonged his life by doing evil. Do not be self-righteous and think yourself wise. It will ruin your life. Do not practice evil and act the fool. You may die before your time. It is good to heed both warnings, for the person who honors God avoids all extremes. Esther grimaced. I have a hard time when the wicked get away with their crimes. It shouldn't be that way. Kohelet turned to her and spoke softly. Yet there is no other way it can be. Our world is full of problems, and death puts everyone under great pressure. It doesn't take long for selfish people to realize that with the odds stacked against them, it is far more advantageous to use the efforts of others for your own gain. If you want to get ahead quickly, just steal and reap the rewards of other people's hard work. Add in a corrupt government that is unwilling to stop criminals, and wicked people do win over the righteous ones. But as you said, being overly righteous is not good either. The priests come to the market, and they make a great show of being untouched by evil. They pretend to live in a special world of the holy and blameless, yet they are so picky and treat others with contempt. You can feel it when they look at you. She gestured out the window. When they are around, even the summer sky looks gray and soiled. You are right, Esther. Self-righteous people create a world where the knowledge of good and evil is carefully controlled. They like to think their holy lives make it possible to have a spiritual return to the Garden of Eden. They believe they walk with God in such a special relationship that they remain disconnected from anything and anyone who might corrupt them. It's their way of hiding from the evil within. Esther snorted. It doesn't work. And they not only ruin their own relationships with their holy image, but they also encourage the younger ones to be like them. Their false world feeds on itself and gets bigger and bigger all the time. They love those extremes that you warned about because they love the attention it brings them. Kohelet smiled at her. I like the way you put that. People are good at creating religious systems that give the appearance of a life apart from the realities of a twisted and broken world. In reality, they live in constant fear of being wrong and losing their status with others. They can't let themselves fall short, or their whole world may collapse. Esther chuckled as she pushed to her feet. And I'd better get back to my shop, or my whole business may collapse. She headed toward the door and turned back. Don't you forget to take your medicine. You may be a wise man, but that doesn't mean you know everything. Kohelet laughed and picked up the bottle. I don't have any honey to go with it right now. Then I will send some back with Eli as soon as he has a chance. He has been talking on and off with Caleb all morning. Caleb? What's he up to now? He managed to trap that beautiful little songbird that has been visiting the market. He's going to blind her so he can sell her for her song. Eli is trying to talk him out of it and even offered to buy her from Caleb for 2 silver coins. But that's only got Caleb's greed going, and now he is seeing who else will bid on her. It's like you said, in a greedy world, the innocent always suffer. She shook her head as she closed the door behind her. Kohelet moved quickly to the window. That was why Simca had not come back this morning. Caleb's trap had finally worked. You've been listening to The Scroll, Chapter 11, a story of the writing of the book we now refer to as Ecclesiastes. You can find more at artofwork.ca, bringing ancient wisdom to life. Thank you for listening.